Hello, and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Marilyn Pittman. The following is a special rebroadcast. We're celebrating 10 years of Out in the Bay. Soon we'll be inviting you to our 10th anniversary party. You can find out about it here on the air, on our website, outinthebay.org, outinthebay.org, and on Twitter at Out in the Bay and Facebook at Out in the Bay. This first piece is from 2005. It's a 20-minute sound portrait of the late great disco diva Sylvester. It features author Josh Gamson talking about and reading from his 2005 biography, The Fabulous Sylvester, along with some of Sylvester's live and studio recordings, and some fans I talked to at the original book release party at the LGBT Center here in the city. Enjoy.
I love Sylvester. I've DJed since the 70s and loved playing his music and also loved dancing to his music ever since the 70s. I'm just turning 50, and just in the 70s, that was the music to dance to. I was doing flips and flops and twirls and rolls to all of Sylvester's music.
Music takes you there. It's not that hostile rap music.
Well, we should be educating our kids today about Sylvester, you know, the young generation of gay people.
Yeah, I think it's an education in fabulousness, and that has been lost. There's nothing particularly fabulous about gay life now to me. And it may just be that I've aged out of it a little bit, but I don't think so. I think it's there's kind of an ironic, unintended consequence of a successful social movement like the gay and lesbian rights movement has been. The assimilation part of it has been very successful, and that means things have gotten a little uninteresting, and there's a lot of conformity and a lot of pressure to conform.
There's even pressure to conform and have babies now. Can you believe this? What would Sylvester say?
He'd say, go for it. Gay people having babies? That's fabulous. That's fabulous. I don't think, you know, Sylvester probably, you know, if Sylvester wanted to get married, he did get married. You know, before everybody was doing this, you know, marry me thing, he was getting married in Golden Gate Park, you know, in a white tunic with garlands in his hair, you know, whatever year that was, 71 maybe. And if he wanted to get married now, he'd get married now.
Sounds like you're saying that he's like a true American, somebody who really lived his freedom.
Yes, the freedom, the kind of freedom that he represented is not the kind of freedom that's promoted now. It is very American, and he was very much an individualist. He liked to say, you know, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm Sylvester. The end of the sentence was always, I'm Sylvester. Such a, you know, I'm just unique and unprecedented, and I'm going to be that person to the fullest degree. That's what he represented. That's really personal freedom. It wasn't highly political.
Who should be thanking him artistically?
RuPaul. RuPaul does directly thank Sylvester. There are people carrying on the tradition like RuPaul. I saw Kevin Aviance in New York give a performance of Do You Want to Funk that was amazing, just amazing, of his own, but his own interpretation of Sylvester.
Don't you think it's fun that we're calling Sylvester he, and that, you know, he maintained his identity? He pioneered androgyny.
He did, and a lot of people still remember Sylvester as she. And Sylvester, on any given day, might be she. So it wasn't just androgyny, it was fluidity. It was, you know, who am I today? How male am I today? How female am I today? And, you know, one of the things I noticed writing the book is that interviewing people, some people say she did this, she did that consistently the whole way through the conversation. Other people say he consistently. And others just go back and forth depending on the story they're telling.
So during the Watts riots, I understand Sylvester was out looting. What was she looting? He looting?
Well, he was a member of a sort of sorority gang called the Discotes. And their main goal was to be fabulous and to party and to dress. And during the Watts riots, Sylvester said when everybody else was looting for TVs and stuff, they were stealing makeup and wigs and lipstick. He said just the fun stuff. And that was his life back then.
He was from South Central.
He was from South Central. I mean, they were partying in Watts.
Josh Gampson, the author of The Fabulous Sylvester, a biography of the late great San Francisco disco diva. You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Josh reads from his book about the early days when Sylvester was known as Dooney.
One day in 1968, in their heyday, a gaggle of discotes was hanging out at the Clowns, a club on Jefferson where they often met. Dooney was nowhere to be found. He'd said he would be there. He'd told them that morning, "Get ready for me." You knew what that meant in a general sense. It was both a promise and a warning, but you simply couldn't predict the specifics. Once, "get ready" had meant a dress made entirely of paper, the first in a long series of disposable one-nighter outfits. For the first ever Watts Summer Festival in 1966, Dooney had stapled together aluminum pie tins into matching dresses for him and Tiki, another discote, and Tammy had made styrofoam earrings to match. When they walked through the festival, people were drawn, confused and squinting in the sun, to the blinding silver light that turned out to be Tiki and Dooney. Another time Dooney had appeared in a knit dress, bright lipstick, and nail polish, and a Batman belt, and once in a baby doll dress, windowpane stockings and square-toed big-buckled pilgrim shoes, his hair in Beatles bangs with so many curls on top that his head looked like a chocolate fountain. He could wear a full-length sequined gown or two odd-shaped pieces of fabric glued together just so. He was known to have worn a snazzy dress cinched with a big, wide camping belt into which were stuck a knife, fork, spoon, and canteen. With Dooney, says Diane, a discote, it was always an ongoing saga. What's she going to do next? Dooney would come on a pogo stick. It didn't matter. She was her only competition, because nobody was on her level. Dooney could always walk away with the spotlight, honey, without even making a big deal out of it. Sometimes, Tiki says, it seemed as if Dooney had come from outer space. Legend has it that he once won a prize at a ball wearing a sheet, a rose, and angel hair from a Christmas tree, and all he did was twirl the rose and spin around.
What was your favorite part of your book to write?
There are three parts that I think were really my favorites. One was the discotes, because I didn't know anything about his background in L.A., and the surviving discotes are just wonderful, and the stories that they told, I was just screaming. I was just dying laughing. I mean, it was just fun to hear it and fun for them to remember it and fun to write it. And then I enjoyed writing the period of time where he hit. There's just something about a moment of breakthrough and success that's fun to write about. Sylvester popped into stardom with suddenness and force, like an ember that has smoked for a while and then without warning ignited. For a few minutes, his life became one of those Stars Born, oh my God, that's my song movie montages. As a child, he had no doubt imagined it all something like this, corny and glamorous, maybe sketched out the scenes on a notepad. The song begins, and here's Sylvester staring at the portable radio in his laundromat, screaming and throwing his socks in the air. Cut to the tinny speakers of an Audi, and then to Sylvester driving in a beret, grinning to himself. Cut to Sylvester signing autographs on the streets of San Francisco, a large ring flickering and bracelets shivering. Cut to sweaty men dancing, eyes closed, fists up, and shirtless. Cut to Sylvester arriving at a gig in New York City in dark Jackie O sunglasses while bodyguards hold back reaching hands. Cut to Sylvester in a radio interview, both wearing headphones, their heads thrown back in laughter. Cut to the Billboard charts, dates flapping by as the song shoots up the charts. Cut to ABC Sunday Night Football going to commercial as fans dance to Mighty Reel. Feeling real is an interesting notion, and a lot more was packed into that little song than Sylvester's simple lyrics let on.
Josh Gamson reading from his book, The Fabulous Sylvester. You're listening to KALW, Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman.
On the one hand, to be real is to be authentic, down to earth, not fronting. To feel real is to let out something you recognize as your genuine self, free of social airs and pretensions, unafraid, unhidden, honest. This was the realness people, especially gay people, so accustomed to closets, felt from Sylvester himself, as he sang joyfully about sex in the dark with another man. Yet to some people, those in the drag queen culture in which Sylvester was reared, for instance, to be real is to pass in a social role that has been denied you. To feel real in this sense is to make the costume into your skin, to bring the fantasy self into actual being. This was the realness people might have felt watching Sylvester become a diva before their eyes. Perhaps, in the end, realness simply means refusing to be denied, being exactly who you feel yourself to be, occupying your space with all your might.
Are you a fan of Sylvester's?
Very much so. I grew up on his music when I was a kid. Mom used to go to the, prayer meetings and stuff. We'd pull out all our Sylvester records and have a good time. And when you dance to his music, you lose your mind and just become one.
Do you have any favorite songs?
My favorite song would be Disco Fever. And my other song, oh my God, it was a live recording, March 11, 1979, at the Opera House.
You see, these girls, Martha Nassau, I met them 3 years ago. Was it February, Martha?
February.
3 years ago. Little audition we held on 6th Avenue in Judah. I will not forget. We had our first rehearsal in a Volkswagen on our way to Marin County. And these girls have stuck with me all through everything, y'all, and they're here right now. I want you to know that. You see, I don't know if y'all have noticed it or not, but these women can sing, y'all. Honey, your ear has to be in your foot to not hear these women can sing. They don't need these dresses. They don't need them jewelries. They don't need that hair. These women can sing, y'all. Now, folks say seeing is believing, right? I done told you everything I could tell you. Now it's their turn to tell you. Mama, you've been around. Girl, I know that you've been around.
I've been around, and you were here all the time.
Construct the pre-AIDS San Francisco scene beautifully. Can you describe a little bit about that? How our world was here in San Francisco, pre-AIDS, with Sylvester in it?
There's an innocence to it that people describe of discovering freedom and discovering sexual freedom and throwing off shame and the excitement of throwing off shame. Just the energy that comes out of you, too. I mean, I think that's what a lot of the dancing was about. It was just dancing, celebrating what it feels like not to have so much shame around you.
And that's why we call it gay pride.
Yeah, I mean, the old kind of gay pride, not the Miller Beer gay pride, the pride in the pride that takes work to get to, kind of. I think there was also... it just sounds like it was a lot of fun. You know, it was depraved and fun.
It's a new gay radio show on KALW called Out in the Bay at 91.7. Are you a fan of Sylvester's?
Yes, I am. I actually saw Sylvester back in the 80s when, what club was it, After Hours Club? Trocadero. You know, I loved his music, seeing a bunch of stuff with him with the Fairies. Know some people that have worked with him.
When you say the Fairies, you mean the Radical Fairies?
Yes, the Radical Fairies. I know a few Radical Fairies now. I've known some producers and musicians that work with them. I'm a musician myself.
Do you think we need the fabulousness of a Sylvester in our community now?
I think so. I mean, he did represent, you know, sparkly, the shine and everything else, but he was very real. He had a charisma about him and just, you know, a lot of talent. So, you know, we need more people like that in general, in the world. Our community especially. There's a lot going on right now that we need to fix and to heal. So,
you think Sylvester would see us as too assimilated now in terms of the whole gay marriage and baby thing?
Oh, I would kind of think so. Everything is a little too perfect and exact and very alike and pristine. You know, where's the dirt and the coughs and the hiccups and the flapping and, you know, what was the rest of that?
What's your name?
My name is Blue Buddha.
She didn't know I could do that, did you?
I got deep satisfaction out of writing his dying in a way. Not the very end, but how he handled the passage. And I just, I don't know, I felt it somehow. So I, you know, when you're writing and you feel it, then it's satisfying.
He taught you?
He taught me a lot. And I didn't know why I was the one doing the book in the first place. So, you know, I just did it, and through the course of it, figured out what I was learning. And
can you tell me more about that? What else you might have? What you learned?
I learned to be more upfront about figuring out my own kind of fabulousness. You know, it's not through clothing, or, you know, I don't even know that I know what it is. But to think in those terms, because I was writing about someone whose whole thing was, we all need to be fabulous. And I had to figure out, in order to write the book, what that meant. And then it's a challenge to me to figure out what that means for me. It taught me even greater respect for sissies and the sissy in me than I had going in. I mean, I was already on the way to... You know, I've always respected people who were carrying stigma for other people, basically. But he brought it home, and his music. I learned a lot about his music and the traditions that he was working in, and how much communication with sound and feeling, how important that is.
Mantra. Awesome. Thank you. Come on, Queen Mother. Come on over here close to me.
Oh, yeah.
Come too.
There's plenty of room, honey. There's plenty of room.
All right, dear.
Oh. Don't we look lovely? Oh.
You're listening to a special rebroadcast on Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. That was an audio portrait on Sylvester, the late great disco diva, that I produced in 2005. In 2010, I had the privilege of interviewing Mike Smith, one of the founders, along with Cleve Jones and Gert McMullen, of the Names Project Quilt. For more than a decade, he's been the executive director of the AIDS Emergency Fund, established in 1982, to help people living and dying with AIDS. He just announced that he's stepping down after many years of service. Thanks, Mike. You can go to aef-sf.org, and you'll see Sylvester's Mighty Real Greatest Dance Hits record is now available. Why is this important to the AIDS Emergency Fund? Listen to these three excerpts from my 2010 Out in the Bay interview with Mike Smith, and you'll understand why.
Sylvester died in 1988, and at the time he left his whole estate to AIDS Emergency Fund, but he also died broke. It took them 22 years to pay off the debts of his estate, but thanks to iTunes and digital recordings, his estate has started to make money. They closed it out, and AIDS Emergency Fund got a check for $140,000 2 weeks ago.
Oh, Sylvester would be so happy.
I know, I know.
Really?
Yeah.
And that just makes my...
It's just, isn't it just a wonderful story to see it come back around after all these years?
Well, yeah.
AEF owns the rights to it now, and anytime somebody downloads a song, we get a few pennies.
You own... Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It finally worked out
now,
after 22
years.
Now, tell
me about why Sylvester chose AEF at that time.
You know...
He died in
December of 88.
88.
Yeah. AIDS Emergency Fund has been around since 1982. We're one of the two or three oldest AIDS organizations in the country. What we really were from the very beginning was basically rent parties. At that time, people were being diagnosed with HIV. They were being fired immediately. Their landlords didn't want them in buildings. People were being evicted left and right. People were dying in hospital corridors. AEF stepped in. We would raise some money, throw a rent party. We'd come up with enough money to keep their rent paid, keep their lights on, help them die with dignity in that short period that was just so awful for so many people. We've been at it for years and years and years. Sylvester used to do fundraisers for us at the Elephant Walk. You know, it just everybody in this town at some point or another has done a fundraiser for AIDS Emergency Fund. In that summer of 1987, when we were starting the Names Project in that storefront space there that's now Catch, the restaurant, the front portion of that was actually where Harvey Milk had his last camera store. His main store for years had been up on Castro Street.
Right.
And after he was elected, he pared down the business a little and he had a smaller version right there in that space. So there, we've always had a connection to Harvey. It's really something. At the time, summer of 1987, 1,000 people had died of AIDS in a 10-block radius of the Castro, and no one was talking about it. Everyone was caring for someone. But people just weren't public about it. And starting the Names Project there, in very visibly in a store with big picture windows and having quilt panels there and people coming in, over the course of that summer, I think we really created the first community center. It became the place to come when you discovered that you had HIV and you could sit there and talk with people. People would come and drop off panels for people they knew. We were sewing around the clock to get ready for that first display And literally, people could come in at midnight and sit there and help out and feel like they were part of something. And I think it really went a long way toward opening up everyone in the Castro and everyone in the city to being able to talk about HIV and being able to talk about the decimation that AIDS was causing. And thank God we've moved on from those dark years. But 86 to...
96.
86 to 96, really, until protease inhibitors came out in 96, was a very dark time. Castro was a very desperate, dark place. And everybody, I mean,
Pride March was more like a funeral dirge.
Yeah, and, you know, we all have address books from that period with pages and pages of names crossed out. Gay people who sort of took over the Castro in the 70s and revitalized it and bought up all the old houses and fixed it up, we're pioneers. And in some ways, we might have moved on. We got other things to go be doing that's cutting edge. But, you know, we're always out there as the pioneers and... The Castro's now everybody's and not just ours, and that's okay.
Do you think that AIDS in some way and all of the gay rights activism that came out of AIDS paved the way for gay marriage? I mean, is that a logical extension there?
Oh, I think it absolutely is. I mean, if you look at other civil rights movements, they took 50 to 100 years. How long did it take for women to get the right to vote? How long did it take between the time the Civil War ended and the time the Civil Rights Act was passed? Right. And you look at the pace at which we're creating change in our own community. I have to think that it's because at some point, mostly out of fear and out of the panic and the terror of HIV, a lot of us came together and said, we have to take things in our own hands. We have to let the rest of the world know what's going on. And that was what the NAMES Project was really about. It was about how to tell our story to the rest of the country in a way that people would hear about. HIV at that time was this thing that other people got. Haitians, homosexuals, hemophiliacs, somebody that wasn't your grandmother. You start talking about Quilt, and everybody can connect to remembering it was what their grandmother used to take care of them when they were sick. And it spoke to middle America. And I think it got the Quilt and also the other activism, the ACT UP stuff and everything else, it taught a generation of gay people how to fight for what they want and how to speak in their own voice. And I think that moved our movement along so that the marriage issue, when the marriage issue came up, we were used to claiming our territory and not going meekly.
Mike Smith from the AIDS Emergency Fund here in San Francisco. My interview with him in 2010. You've been listening to a special rebroadcast of the best of Out in the Bay. Join us this spring for our 10th anniversary party. We'll tell you about it on Twitter at Out in the Bay, Facebook Out in the Bay, or at outinthebay.org, where you can make a tax-deductible donation while you download our shows for podcasts. Like us, follow us, party with us, support us. Thanks to Brad Payton and Richard Merck of Portola Valley, California. They're donors. They help. Their donation will inspire you to go to our website, outinthebay.org, and hit the donate button now. We depend on you for support. Also, our new marketing colleague, Gia Schultz, just put up a subscribe button on our splash page to keep you up on the latest shows and events. Thanks, Gia. She's at giaschultz.com. Thanks to the staff and management of KALW, Out in the Bay is produced by Eric Jansen and me. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Thanks for joining me.